will now please welcome Louise to our stage.
My name is Louise and I'm an alcoholic. At the outset, let me say I love AA and that I believe that AA is a thoroughly spiritual program from beginning to end, and it can take you wherever you want to go. That being said, I have to tell you I'm probably at one of the worst places I've been in my sobriety in terms of my emotional, mental, physical, spiritual, whatever sort of attitude towards life, which is not to say that the program doesn't work. It's just to say that I've been working it less than perfectly. And an example I can give you happened tonight. The sponsee that I was going to bring was sick, so I thought I'd go ahead and bring my boyfriend after all. So when I went to pick him up, he was talking on his cell phone, and he didn't get off the cell phone the minute he came in the car, and I just wheeled around and dropped him off on the corner. And so that's how spiritual I am. I can't say that I've gotten a whole lot better in that regard, but I'm sober. Anyway, I'll tell you a little. My drunkalog really is way less interesting than my dry-a-log, and I'll explain that in a minute. I got sober for the first time when I was 27 years old in 1974. You can do the math on that one. You can figure out how old I am now. When I came into AA at that time, I was convinced to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I didn't have to hit a very low bottom in order to be convinced in my heart that I was an alcoholic. And because I'd been sort of 12 steps against my knowledge, sort of without knowing it, I'd been 12 steps. And so when I had my moment of clarity, or I guess you could say it was even a spiritual awakening, when that happened to me, I knew where to turn. And I went to my first AA meeting on September 30th, 1974. And this was in Santa Barbara. And in 1974, AA was somewhat different than it is now. The people that were in there really were old. like I am now, but anyway, they're, it was pretty low bottom drunk, pretty much, and very few women and hardly any young people at all. And when I went to AA meetings, the most that would come out of my mouth was that I'm Louise and I'm an alcoholic. Most of the meetings were kind of like the Quaker meetings where you speak if the feeling moves you. Well, the feeling never moved me, and if it looked like it was going to, somebody else would jump in. So I never shared the whole time that I was attending AA meetings during that time. But I understood that what had lifted my obsession to drink was nothing that I had done, that it was a higher power. I didn't have any problem with the idea that a higher power is necessary to be sober. I didn't have any problem with that. However, I really didn't understand what AA was all about. I really believed that the people that attended AA meetings still had the obsession to drink, and that the only reason that they were at a meeting was because they were white knuckling it, and they would be down at the bar if they weren't going to that table. And so all of the stuff I might have heard about doing steps, all of the things I might have heard about the program, I don't know whether I heard them or not. I evidently didn't hear them. They may have been said. But after about 6 months, I declared myself cured. I knew I was never going to drink again. I didn't want to hear about alcohol. I mean, I really was fortunate. I was really blessed that the obsession had been lifted, and that, you know, that in my home life, I wasn't around alcohol. My husband didn't drink. Most of his friends didn't drink. And anyway, so I was pretty much insulated. Anyway, I thought I was good to go, and I had no idea about the ism of alcoholism. So when I stopped drinking, all great things happened. I stopped, you know, throwing coffee mugs of my husband across the room. I stopped throwing books of his out the window. I stopped abandoning my car on the freeway Meridian and having to find it the next day. I stopped moving out and renting apartments and then forgetting where I'd gone, you know, anyway. All of that stuff cleared up right away. But I didn't do anything to work on myself. I didn't do the steps. I didn't have a sponsor. But I had all the AA slogans, you know, live and let live, drop the rock, first things first, easy does it, thy will be done. What's the other one? Let go, let God. You know, all the slogans that they had all over the meeting room, you know, those could pretty much, you know, I thought I pretty well absorbed those. And in fact, I mean, amazingly enough, I managed to not drink for nearly 13 years. However, I was just about to turn 40 years old, and I had a midlife crisis, I guess. You know, the grass was greener, and, oh, it's too long of a story, but I decided to cheat on my husband is what I decided to do, and that wasn't the first time, but this was by far the most interesting time. It was with a sixth grade teacher at the school where my kids went to grammar school. It was ugly, 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 and I wound up, this is how I drank again. First of all, 13 years without a drink. I think what kept me sober all that time was I was too friggin' busy. I have 5 kids, and they were all, you know, some were in elementary school, some were in junior high, some were in high school. You know, I was busy all the time. So, you know, who could think about drinking? But when I hit 40, I think my last one was finally weaned. And, you know, I started thinking, well, what about me, you know? Here I've been raising these kids. You know, what about my needs? Anyway, that kind of thinking can lead you to drinking real fast, and that's exactly what happened. I decided to celebrate my 40th birthday by inviting a bunch of friends over, and I was serving them wine. I wasn't going to drink any, because I'm an alcoholic. I wasn't going to drink any wine. I was going to serve it to them. Then we were all going to go to a Crosby, Stills, and Nash concert at the County Bowl.
Ooh.
Well, you know who showed up at that concert? The guy I was having an affair with and his wife. Him. The nerve of him. How could he even be there? My little world was rocked. So I went home and I finished off whatever it was that I, some kind of big bottle that, you know, was bigger than a regular wine bottle was big. Anyway, I finished that off, and my first thought when I felt that little buzz was, that's why I used to drink. Whoa, I'd forgotten how good that felt. Well, that felt good for about 5 minutes. And then the guilt set in. Because living next door to me was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh. They used to hire people from New House, which is like a sort of a halfway house in Santa Barbara. And he would always have these AA speaker tapes blaring from his garage, you know, all times of day. So I go boo-hoo-hooing over to his house. Anyway, I actually tried to go back to AA the next day. I called the lady who had been probably as close to a sponsor as I ever had. I used to check in with her periodically, say, Katie, I'm still sober. And she'd say, have you been going to meetings? And I'd say, no. And she'd shake her head. Well, if I call her Katie, guess what? Well, the inevitable had happened. And so she said, and I told her kind of the circumstances, and she said, will you get yourself to a women's meeting? Okay. Well, anyway, I went to a women's meeting, but I couldn't relate. It was all about relationships at that time. You know, until that day before, until the day before I had drunk, I had more time probably than every woman in that room put together, except that that day I had one day. But never mind that. I just had too much ego and pride. So I didn't... I dabbled with AA for a while, but and I didn't drink for quite a while after that, but AA, I didn't see AA as my solution at that time. So I don't know, the period of time that I was out there was less about drinking as it was about being absolutely nuts. And I will give a nice, funny example of that shortly. It's my favorite story. Because what happened was, you know, I didn't drink for a while, then I would drink. And then I wouldn't drink for a while, and then I would drink. Finally, what happened was I went back to school to get my teaching credential. And... during that time, it was kind of a trip. I was a student teaching in a kindergarten class, and to get myself going, I had to have a little Kahlua in my coffee to face those 5-year-olds. Man, they are scary. And then, you know, then I'd come home and I'd have, you know, those little Glen Ellen Winery. They were so cute. Sutter Home and Glen Ellen Winery. I could put them in my purse and drink them on my way out to school, sleep through my seminars. By the time I got home, I was hungover and I was done. Yeah, I was always such a lightweight. It never, I mean, that was probably what saved my life. But anyway, I did that for a while. Then finally, it was actually probably around President's Day, and I don't know, it just wasn't working for me. I mean, I didn't have any profound experience, nothing like the first time I got sober, but it just wasn't working. I was trying to control it and enjoy it the way I always had tried to control it and enjoy it to prove that I wasn't really an alcoholic. But anyway, I just stopped. Don't ask me how, but I just stopped. But that was not the end of the problem. But what was really ironic was that the second half of that year, I had my student teaching assignment was in a fifth grade class, and my master teacher was in AA. Whoa! I mean, talk about a little God thing. Actually, I still haven't come back to AA yet. No, I hadn't come back to AA yet. We talked about AA, and I thought it would be a good idea maybe sometime if I went back. But anyway, I didn't go back. I really didn't go back until my marriage was absolutely in the toilet, and things were beyond all hope, and I was just an absolute mess. And finally... it was Mother's Day in 1993 that I went to a speaker meeting in AA at the Alana Club, actually, in Santa Barbara. And I don't know, something happened, and I knew I was home again. In the meantime, my husband and I have separated, and I'm living in a condominium, and he started dating somebody. The nerve. I mean, come on. After I'd been such a loving wife, and he started dating someone. Well, you know, I wanted to see what she looked like. I'm sober, you might, mind you. I wanted to see what she looked like. I was really curious. And so I found out from my kids where they were going to a movie. And I'm into disguise. I'm into costumes and things like that. I donned a wig. Put some fake teeth in, and I put like a wad of toilet paper in one of my shoes so I'd walk with a limp, and put some in my mouth, and parked in this parking garage near the theater. And anyway, I go up to the ticket counter. What time is the movie out? And this lady, maybe she told me the wrong time, because I tell you what, I never saw them. Never saw them after all of that, you know. But there were teenagers on the street pointing their fingers at me. I don't know why. Anyway, this is something I did sober, you see. I did worse things in sobriety than I ever did when I was drinking. Because drinking gave me a little bit of relief. Without drinking, I'm just left with this. And without an AA program, this is just gonna do things like, you know, kick my boyfriend out of the car because he's talking on a goddamn cell phone. You know, that's what this camp's gonna do, you know? You know, what can I say? I want it my way, you know, and I still want it my way, and I have a real hard time, you know. The topic was live and let live the other night at a meeting, and I thought, God, I don't think I can possibly share on that. Because I have such a hard time with it. I guess the deal is, you know, my drunkologue really is such a panty waist, wimpy, you know, goody two-shoes kind of story. But to me, what I didn't get the first time around was that the ism is what gets me. Maybe I could have stayed sober. Maybe I could have stayed sober without going to AA all those years. That would have just made me, you know, an absolute wretched human being, and I would have been taking everybody else down with me. When I came back to AA, my marriage was done. I was probably at the worst place I'd ever been in emotionally in my life. And I needed something. Because as alcoholics, we want to feel better. We don't want to feel these feelings. You know, we'll do anything to avoid feeling these feelings, whether it's buying clothes or eating or smoking or whatever. Whatever we do, or taking hostages. With me, it was relationships. That was like, okay, you feel better about my tail. For 5 minutes. But, I need affirmations. You can see I'm in sort of a state. But, that's the problem. Without a higher power, without something that's going to give me direction, I'm left to my own devices. And I'm not a good person to come to for advice or, you know, anything resembling rationality when my emotions get involved. So I got a sponsor, and she walked me through my divorce is what she did. She walked me through all of that feeling of being absolutely out of control. It's not like I had this wonderful marriage. Oh, God. You know, it was a horrible marriage, really. But I was married, you know. I had somebody, you know, and I did have 5 kids, for God's sake. And so, you know, the falling apart of a family is like a huge thing. I'm sure anybody who's been through that can understand that. I felt like I was on a train that everybody had been, that jumped off because they knew that it was about to, you know, the track was about to end and the train was about to plummet over the precipice. And, you know, like I was on the train and there it goes. Anyway, that's how I felt. That I was just on this, you know, uncontrollable ride. And basically, you know, she put me in touch with a higher power, and she told me to trust in that higher power. She told me to get myself out of the way as much as I could. She told me to let go and let God. She told me, you're okay exactly where you are. She would say things like, you're right where you're supposed to be. Now, I love it when people tell me that. I really do. Some people hate that. You're right where you're supposed to be, because it gives me permission to feel crappy. You know, if I'm feeling really bad and somebody says you're right where you're supposed to be, then I'm thinking to myself, then it's okay to feel bad. We don't all have to be happy all the time. You know, I mean, we go through stuff. Life happens. You know, I mean, this truly has been a difficult time for me. I've had difficulty with my children, difficulty with my job, and then a friend of mine recently committed suicide about a little over a week ago, and somebody in the program. And anyway, you know, things happen. And, you know, I think, you know, sort of like, what's the AA way of going through this? You know, I mean, I do want to go through life with some kind of dignity and grace. I don't want to be whining and screaming and clawing and all of that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, I mean, we're entitled to feel bad about things. We're entitled to be angry. I mean, it doesn't mean we have to hold on to our anger. But, I mean, these feelings happen. We're just human beings, for God's sake. We don't all of a sudden start walking on water just because we get sober. You know, we have our flaws. And if somebody says, you're just right where you're supposed to be, then I'm thinking to myself, then it's okay to be flawed. It's okay to be human. God, if we weren't human, we wouldn't need God, would we? You know? I mean, that's what that book, Not God, is about. Is that, I mean, to me, the gift of AA is that you can be as far down as anything, and there is a hand that's going to come down and pull you up. I mean, that we're vehicles for God. God works through people. And somebody says, you know, people are God with skin on. I mean, that we hear other people's stories. Nobody's an authority in here. We're all just people trying to get by, trying to do the best we can with what we've got. It works better sober. But, you know, even if we're not sober, we're still trying the best we can, you know. And I don't know, there's this thing about people thinking that they've been chosen to get sober, you know. I mean, I know that I was not responsible for my sobriety. I know that a higher power, somehow God's grace, relieved me of the obsession to drink. But I think it gets real sketchy when people say, oh, well, you know, God had a plan for me. Oh, evidently, you didn't have a plan for Mary. Oh, evidently, you didn't have a plan for Monty. Not, anyway. Evidently, you didn't have a plan for Tommy Thompson or David Smith or, you know, hosts of people that we know that die in the disease or that kill themselves sober. You know? I think there's something flawed about looking at it that way, because for every person that I didn't kill driving drunk, somebody else may have killed. Does that mean that God didn't have a plan for them? Anyway, do you get what I'm trying to say here? I think there's a huge mystery out there, and that we'll never know why some of us get sober and some of us don't get sober. I just am so grateful that I was relieved of the obsession to drink and that I did find AA. It was nothing that I did, and I'm very grateful for it, but I want to stop short of saying that God had a plan for me. Because he's got a plan for everybody then. But anyway, that was sort of a weird way to end it, but that's how I'm doing it. Bye.